Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Revisionist Report with Carolyn Yeager. Today is Friday, June 24th. Let me remind you that you can find information about me at carolynyeager.com. And also that on Monday, I'm not sure now if I'm going to have Eric Hunt as a guest on Monday. He's not sure now whether he has all of his information together that he is capable of putting together. We'll see, but I'm going to be talking about Dennis Avey on Monday and my own new discoveries myself, and I might have Eric here with me or I might not, but it's going to be a very interesting program, so do tune into it. Now, Avey is a British ex-POW who is one of the latest to cash in on the lucrative Holocaust survivor story business. He's written a book which has just come out in English. The title, The Man Who Broke into Auschwitz. It's just new on the American, in the American bookstores, but it's been out in English, actually. It's been out in English, for about 6 months or so in England, but I should say it's just come out in America, although a different version of the book, an American version of the book. Of course, the languages in both is English. All right, I have written about Dennis for over a year now, and you can find those articles on my website, carolynyeager.com. Now, the call-in number today is 1-800-313-9443, and I invite Steve from Illinois to call in again because he didn't get a chance to complete what he was wanting to say yesterday. And if he thinks it's still relevant, call in, and he can talk about that today for a little bit. Now, our discussion this week has been about what can be put under the broad heading of planned mass re-education. We started out with the denazification program in Germany by the Allies, especially the U.S. military government in place at the time, and continued with the infiltrative work, I would call it, of the Institute for Social Research, also known as the Frankfurt School, which was made up mostly of Jews who had moved from Germany to the United States from 1933 on. These Jews were academics who easily found positions on the faculties of such as Columbia University in New York. Their purpose was to introduce Soviet-style cultural revolution to the West, a revolution which was successful and we know today as political correctness. Actually, they were being successful in Germany, but when Adolf Hitler came to power, they felt they knew they would not be able to continue doing doing that work and having important positions in the universities there. So that's why they came to the United States, where they were welcomed and carried on right here. I want to finish up with this topic today as much as possible. And there's much more. This so much could be gone into, and no doubt it will come up again. But for now, I'm going to move on to something else in case I have listeners of people who would like to listen who can only take so much of a certain topic. So by today, I think I want to continue by discussing the changed meaning of words or introducing words into common usage that are charged with political potency. I think this is one of the ways that this cultural revolution is taking place, one of the ways you can identify political correctness. these political words are some of them I've dealt with in previous talks of mine, are racist, anti-Semite, and even Holocaust and genocide. Of course, there are many other words. These words are very useful to the left and to keeping support for the Jewish state of Israel alive and well. Now, this morning, I saw in the news right off that the United States President Obama is supporting one of the strong strands of this very cultural revolution. He said, I believe that gay couples deserve the same legal rights as every other couple in this country. He was at a Manhattan fundraiser, and it was geared specifically to the gay community. They were all paying a lot of money to hear him, and they want to support him. They want him to support them. And there is, of course, this vote coming up in the New York Senate to allow New York State gay people to marry legally, to institute legal gay marriage in New York State. And he didn't want to say what they should do. That would be politically inept of him, you know, to interfere in the process of the court. But he did say to this gathering that there were those who shouted at him at events about other causes of the gay community, such as the need for anti-hate crime legislation and for the repeal of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell ban on openly gay military service. And both of those since have been achieved, or have since been achieved. Obama has also won favor, it says, Obama also has instructed the Justice Department to stop defending in court a law defining marriage as between a man and a woman. So in other words, what's clear is that Obama is promoting this, excuse me, all the way, but he wants to appear that he's not, that he's just in tune with the American electorate that's moving in this direction. Well, I say we are not moving of our own free will, but are being forcibly pushed in this direction. And far too many people don't understand that, and that's because they don't understand what political correctness really is, or what took place in 1945, beginning with the overt re-education program in Germany. In a direct appeal for votes, going on a little bit more about Obama, since I still have a little time, he said, with your help, if you keep up the fight, if you will devote your time and your energies this campaign one more time, I promise you we will write another chapter in that story. I'll be standing there right there with you. Well, he makes it as clear as possible how he wants this to turn out and what he's for and what side he's on, and that he is a cultural Marxist. Now, this is what we get in democracy, my friends, and this is what I'm going to talk about today, the difference between the forms of government. This is a freedom gone crazy. So I think it's time for a break now, and I don't know what happened to the break, truthfully, but it says I have a call. I think I missed my break. I don't know how that happened, but I will keep going. All right. Wonderful. I do have a caller, and I'll take that caller in a minute. Now I'm talking about democracy. You know, democracy, as I said yesterday morning, that I grew up, of course, like I no doubt almost all of you, believing that you couldn't possibly argue against democracy, that nobody in their right mind would ever consider that democracy wasn't the ultimate best form of government that was ever devised. And of course it was devised in the great civilization of ancient Greece, and it's been the ideal of the Western civilization ever since. Not really true, but and authoritarianism, or some kind of form of single man control, or single man leadership is anathema to freedom, and all of this. Well, we're going to examine this a little bit and talk about some of these words and talk about authoritarianism. First, I'm going to take the call from John from Tennessee. Hello, John. Welcome.
Oh, good morning. This is the first time I've actually listened to your program for any length of time. In and out of a truck. What I wanted to bring up, you were talking about words that have been changed, and brought up a news article regarding gay rights. You know, I'm in my 50s, and I can remember a time when gay really meant happy. In fact, there was a children's toy company in Walled Lake, Michigan. Do you remember the old plastic boats and cars that the kids had that they pushed around? You could buy them at the corner store pretty cheap. This company was called Gay Toys. It had been in business for over 50 years and had to change the name of the company because the definition of the word changed, and they did not want to be associated with perverse toys. Mm-hmm. So they changed the name. 50 years of a man's hard work, privately owned company. His blood, his sweat, his tears, down the tubes, because just as God's word says, evil becomes good and good becomes evil. for you or me to talk about homosexuality or gay rights or equal rights for lesbians or transgender. You can't call them individuals, and you can't call them men or women, can you? So what are they? But for you or me to say that, hey, it's incorrect.
Yes.
There was a time when it was proper to stand up against perversion. Now, it's a crime. So in that day, evil will become good and good will become evil. Hello, people. We are here. So what are we going to do about it?
Well, thank you for asking that question, because that's exactly what I want to talk about, is what we're going to do about it. And to understand it, to think that we even should do something about it, we have to understand where it comes from. And if we think that it's a natural outpouring of people's desire for freedom and rights and tolerance and so on, then we're very reluctant to try to do anything about it, but we feel we must go along with it. And that's where most people are today, because they don't want to be hurtful. And most of these individuals, as individuals, gays and lesbians and even the transgender people, all of them, if you meet these people, most of them as individuals, they're nice people. A lot of them are just as respectable in outwardly as anyone else. It's not about hurting these individuals, but as a group, they are very destructive. And therefore, we have to look at it that way. We can't look at everything as a bunch of individuals, and all these individuals, well, we're going to hurt this individual if we do this. Look, you are just bringing up how they hurt the owner of this business, and this is just one example, you know, of an individual who was injured by what this groupthink has been doing. So this is why, well, it's difficult. If it was easy,
okay,
if it was easy, yeah, go ahead.
What are the mobs do? Is that in order to make something that your conscience, if you have one, will let you know is improper. I don't, you know, and it's wrong. They painted the lips of the pig, much like they did, you know, when abortion came out in the early 20s with Margaret Sanger and Planned Parenthood. It was an attitude of you have no right, because you're inferior to us, therefore we're going to forcibly sterilize you without your consent, and in many instances, your knowledge. And that didn't go over well, so they get out the tube of lipstick, and they paint this pig, and they say, we think so much of you that you have the right not to have a child, because it's going to interfere with your upward mobility or what have you. So they understand. They're not stupid people. They paint the lips of the pig. The sad part is that the American people, for the most part, are sleeping mentally. They have been taught through the public school system what to think rather than how to think. There is no right, there is no wrong, because the morals have been attacked. So they can say anything, and people will say, well, okay, I don't want to be called a nut. I don't want you not to like me, rather than standing up for what you know. It doesn't take a spiritual person to know right from wrong. When we were kids.
Yeah, all right, John, I'm going to have to interrupt you because I've got some more callers. And thank you very much for your call. You brought up some very good points. And please do call, keep listening and call again. You know, John, what John was saying was talking about seeing these individuals as wrong. But even if you don't see them, even if you don't see homosexual individuals as wrong, even if you think, well, that's their choice, and, well, I wouldn't choose it, they have a right to choose it, which they do. You can't stop that. I wouldn't even try to stop that. But I think what's more important is to see what effect the changing of the society's laws and the society's morals, I think John would agree with this, society's mores has on all the rest of us and into the future, and how it will eventually destroy our society. So while as individuals, these people might be seen as harmless, as a group, they are not harmless, and in their demands to have their particular way of life made into seen as normal and proper and okay for all of us, which influences children. And here's my belief on homosexuality, real quick. People say it is, people are born this way. You cannot help, they can't help it, so why persecute them? It's not their choice. That is true of many of them. It is not a choice they made. They are that way. But a lot of people nowadays are gravitating along those lines simply because they're attracted to things that are different, new, on the fringes or somewhat, and just want to change, hate traditional society for one reason or another, want to be anti that, and it's not that hard. I'm not talking from experience, but you know, you can become that way because you choose to, and it can be easier to form relationships with people of your own sex than with people of the opposite sex. But what this does, it kills eventually in the normal process of bringing children in the world and wanting to bring children into the world. Now, these people want to have children, but they have to get their children through artificial means of one sort or another. And so this changes everything, just changes everything, and it changes the relationship between men and women. It tears up the family. They say they make families, but it's not the same kind of family. A true family is, and I don't think this is just reactionary. I think this is nature made, that a family is a man and a woman, and then their children are born of their own genetic material and carry on their genetics. They don't come from somebody else, and they just bring them up. This breaks up something. This destroys the family in so many ways. Well, I've gone on with this too long. I want to get back to authoritarianism and see what we can say about this, because I want to contrast democracy. We see what we get with democracy, friends. You know, I know a lot of people are going to have a hard time with that, but let's look at all the democracies in the world today and what shape are they in. They're a mess. They're a mess. Why is it? Is it because people are going away from the Word of God? I don't think it has to do with that exactly. I think it has to do with the system of government, in which, in a democracy, you have all these interest groups and people. It separates, and not today more and more, because this is being done. This is being done on purpose and has been for a while now. This is what we call the Cultural Revolution and the political correctness, which is really a communistic Marxist configuration of society. So what we have is that in democracy, we break up into all these factions, and this is called freedom. And I'm not saying democracy can't work. Democracy does work better in smaller, homogeneous nations or groups of people. It doesn't work very well when you have a nation like the United States has become, which I don't even call a nation anymore, because I don't know what, you know, how it fits the definition of a nation. Because the people are so disparate within it and have such opposite views on what they want. And, of course, now we know that every election is going to be won by the tiniest margin, because the people are so divided. Where, you know, when Adolf Hitler ran for things and vote, he put referendums and so on up to the people to see whether they approved of what he was doing or not. He would win in the 90 percentile. I mean, people, they were united. And in monarchies, people were generally united for their monarch. And I'm going to maybe mention monarchy a little bit. I'm not promoting monarchy. I don't think to go back to monarchy.
Handmade goodness since 1999. Handcrafted stainless steel and high-quality alloys. There has not been a finer grain mill made right here in the great state of Montana. Hand-operated, the grain mill does it all. Wheat, corn, peanut butter, rye, rice, coffee, beans, flaxseed, all grain types. Make your own gluten-free flour. Experience the satisfaction of providing wholesome, nutritious foods for your family without additives or preservatives. Each meal is handcrafted with manufacturer's lifetime warranty. To order your grain mill, call us at 1-800-724-2719 or go to our online store, republicbroadcasting.org. Take a look at why this grain mill will be passed down through generations.
Are you serious about maintaining or improving your health? If you are, you need Terravim. Terravim offers a full line of vitamins, minerals, and herbs for people serious about enjoying a healthy lifestyle. Our product lines include Alamax, Magnesen, Silver 100, Natura Health Products, Gala Herbs, and Terravim's private label, and undergo rigorous clinical studies by leading researchers and contain physician-grade research-based therapeutic doses of nutrients. All of our vitamin, mineral, and herb products are manufactured under current good manufacturing practices. This is in an FDA-registered production facility, and we guarantee that the ingredients in the supplements are exactly what's on the label. We also provide free consultation for all our products along with general wellness information. All orders over $45 ship free, and all orders received by 3 p.m. ship the same day. When shopping online, enter the coupon code RBN for a 10% discount. To order now, call 1-866-647-4372. That's 1-866-647-4372 or visit terravim.com.
Warning for all Gulf Coast disaster survivors. Be aware that dangerous gases are in the air you breathe. Benzene, hydrogen sulfide, methylene chloride, and Corexit 9500. Keep your body clean with micro plant powder. For all Gulf Coast residents and all who want to be healthy, HempUSA.org brings you a new formulation of micro plant powder with Lactobacillus acidophilus, rebuilding your immune system while detoxing the rest of your body, pulling out positive toxins, heavy metals, viruses, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Micro plant powder will help eliminate these dangerous chemicals from the body used in the Gulf cleanup. At HempUSA.org, we want you to try our number one selling detox product, micro plant powder. Call and order at 1-908-691-2608. 1-908-691-2608. Or visit us at HempUSA.org today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I think we'll be on our regular schedule of commercial breaks now, and I think I allowed myself to go on a bit of a personal rant there. So I want to get back to my structured program material, and I say that because I was going to talk a little about authoritarianism, and yesterday Steve objected, I think, to my use saying that Germans did well under a more authoritarian regime than some other people might, and they didn't. That was not a problem, and that was something that was more natural to them. And he objected to that. I can understand that. I said to just use the word authoritarian is not too good because it has a very negative connotation. And then I brought up the words hierarchical or structured, which I think does fit a German, past German society, and also the German mentality better. Now, I've got a whole definition here of hierarchy, but I think the only really important part to say now is that under a hierarchy, you link directly to, one links directly to one's immediate superior or to one's subordinates. Now, if this is very stiff and unyielding, yes, okay, you would get orders from your superior and you would give orders to your subordinates. And that's all you would, the only part you would play in it. You wouldn't have anything to do with what somebody else is doing, other people's subordinates or other people's superiors or other parts of the government. And this way, of course, it keeps you doing your job as well as you can do it and not worrying about other parts of the job, which is not what we consider generally what we've been taught. We're supposed to look over and know everything and then make all these personal judgments about it and argue about it and say, well, I don't agree with this and I don't agree with that and so on, which has some values, but it also creates a lot of problems. So anyway, this is what hierarchy is. And we find hierarchy, of course, in the militaries everywhere. And in most church organizations, certainly in the Catholic Church, but also other churches, where the general idea is you don't question wherever you are, generally somewhere in the middle, you take orders from your superior, and you may have people to order or manage that you expect to go along with what you tell them. Now, then there's a thing called the Führer principle. It's called the Führerprinzip in German. And it was not invented by the National Socialists, however. It was first introduced by a Baltic German philosopher who by the name of Kaiserling, who claimed that certain gifted individuals were born to rule. And the ideology sees each organization as a hierarchy of leaders, where every leader has absolute responsibility in his own area. And he demands absolute obedience from those below him and answers only to his superiors. Well, this is very much like what I was just talking about. Now, in Germany, under the National Socialists, of course, Adolf Hitler was the supreme leader. So he had absolute responsibility. This was the point that they made often, and you can agree with it or disagree with it. But the supreme leader, who was Adolf Hitler, was answered to God, or you can say to his conscience, and to the German people. That's it. He didn't answer to anyone else. So he didn't have to take orders from anyone, but he answered to God or his conscience and the German people. Would we like to have a president who answered to God or to his conscience and to the American people? I think so. Do we have a president like that? Who does our president answer to? In our wonderful democracy, we have had a whole string of presidents, maybe from the beginning, maybe a few of them tried otherwise, but they answer to, right now we know who they answer to, Israel. I'll say that right out. I think that's pretty well proven. That's what I believe. I'm on that side of the debate. Our presidents answer to Israel. They don't answer to us. And we know our Congress doesn't even answer to us anymore. So something is very wrong. And these great and vaunted democracies have not turned out the way we're told in our school books when we're children. So we need to look at this, and we need to be open to looking at it. That doesn't mean you have to become a National Socialist. You don't have to believe in or like or change your mind about Adolf Hitler, but you should look at it. And to see how did he actually do, because most of what we are told is propaganda, so you're not getting the true picture of how he actually operated. Did he answer to his God and to the German people, or did he not? That's why, in my opinion, and this is a whole other area, that's why, though, so many anti-Hitler, all this anti-Hitler propaganda and disinfo includes the lies that Adolf Hitler was really working for the Jews. He was working for the Zionists. He was working for the British. He was doing all this because one thing they don't want you to ever see is that he was working in the interest of the German people to the best of his knowledge and ability. So I don't know if I'm hearing music. Yes, it's time. I think it's coming up. It's time for the break. When we get back from the break, I'm going to talk more about what we're told about the authoritarian personality and go into political correctness once again. Again, the phone number is 1-800-313-9443. Be back in a couple minutes.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
When I had a heart attack at 42, I was not sure what the future held. But a year later, the doctors could find nothing wrong with me and took me off all my medication. What did I do? I took a herbal mixture of garlic, cayenne, and a few other herbs mixed in liquid form. I now call this Extendovite. I would have never believed that a few simple herbs could actually change my life like they did. Now it's your turn to see what the powers of garlic and cayenne can do for you. For only $69.95 plus shipping and handling for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid, You too can begin on your path to better health. For more information, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, "The government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper." Well, that's a contract. A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offeror can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experienced process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager. We're talking today, continuing to talk about political correctness and forms of government and what has been kind of foisted upon us in the interest of foreign ideas. Now, I was going to talk about the authoritarian personality, a book that was very influential, published in 1950. It influenced American psychologists and social science scientists. Of course, it was written by, I'm not sure now which member of the Frankfurt School it was written by. I think it was not written by Adorno. He wrote some pamphlet about it, but I'm a little confused about that. I don't have it written down in front of me. So, but I want to tell you something that might be very surprising to you to hear me say it. Adolf Hitler was not an authoritarian personality. He was a creative personality, and he really didn't like to exercise authority in that way of giving orders and expecting absolute obedience. And, you know, he wasn't that type of German personality at all. I don't know if there are any of those types, too many, but there are those types everywhere. He knew that what he knew was that he was fighting a strong and very well-entrenched and very militant and very committed enemy. That was what he called Bolshevism, and which definitely had Germany in its aim as its number one target in order to take over Europe. And so he knew he had to be very firm and tough. That's what he was. He was very firm and tough as to who he believed what had to be eradicated from Germany in order for Germany to free itself from this threat. But he was not authoritarian in that, really, he didn't like giving detailed orders, and seldom did he present, did he do it that way. He tended to present the overall picture to his top ministers and so on, and the end result that was needed, and he expected that other one, his minister or whoever he was, or his general or his whatever, to see it and carry it out to gain that objective. But still, written orders were necessary, and everything that he gave orders for in this type of way were written out and his subordinates did receive an order. Nothing was done without an order. So, but he was not, he didn't really like spelling out exactly how he wanted that person to do it. He wanted people to learn more and more to see what was desirable in Germany and to go about in their own creative way, go about taking care of that. All right, I have Lee from North Carolina on the phone. Hello, Lee, welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Hey, hey.
Yes.
I really appreciate a lot of the things that y'all are saying, you know, about, you know, getting to the bottom of a lot of this PC stuff. I'm really extremely skeptical of it. But I do think that, and I'll even admit that a lot of Hitler's economic stuff was probably pretty good. I mean, the Volkswagen is a great example. But one thing you need to be very aware of is that on the political level, like international militarist stuff, Hitler really was evil. Now, a lot of the stuff that was going, a lot of the people going against him, I mean, a lot of the stuff that's coming out about the British and U.S. and all that, I mean, that was pretty bad, too. But I really think that that Hitler was probably what you would call the last of a certain phase of, I would say, political antichrist. And the one that's coming after is going to be an economic antichrist, who's going to be much more powerful.
And how do you know that, Lee? I mean, you're into a kind of a speculation.
Oh, well,
you're saying
not,
what's going to happen without any basis.
Oh no, there's,
you know, you don't have any real basis for saying that Hitler was an antichrist, which I'm not arguing that you can't say it, but only that's the opinion of some people to call him and that there even is an antichrist. That's
okay.
Another.
I'm not going to get into the theology of it, but there is something that's really interesting that as time goes on, the economic, and here's something where you probably agree, the economic takes more and more powerful, it becomes more and more precedent, it takes precedence over the political. Like the first, you know, if you go back to the early 1800s, Napoleon Bonaparte, you know, the reason the French were so powerful in their time was that they were so much more politically savvy than everyone else. The time of economic precedence had not really matured yet, and it was a time where things were decided by the political. And Napoleon also, you could call him, you know, history repeats in cycles. And, you know, it's like evil through Napoleon, that was the beginning of the political antichrist.
All right, so are you saying that Napoleon was evil?
Yeah, yes, he was. And
okay, and what did Napoleon overthrow? Do you think that was good?
Oh, no. Okay, Napoleon, what he did that was so evil, and what he overthrew was evil. But what Napoleon did that was so evil, he used politics to mobilize massive amounts of people and create a military slaughter by attacking Russia. Now, there are certain good impulses in everything, okay? But what he did is he mobilized the population in a way that had never been mobilized before and created this mass slaughter on a scale that had never been created. And then as time, see, before, at the time of the aristocrats.
Yeah, but do you think that was his purpose? That his purpose when he started his military conquest was to slaughter as many people as possible?
Oh, no, that was not his purpose.
Have to be his purpose if he were evil.
His purpose was to take over the world just like every antichrist. And so what happened is as the political becomes more and more trumped by the economic, you see a corresponding capacity for more and more global destruction, whether it's military, whether it's poisoning of people through GMOs, whether it's everything. So what's happening is evil. Good is stronger than it's ever been, but evil also has more potential than it's ever had. And I think people...
Okay, John, no, Lee, I don't want to interrupt you. I really don't. But, you know, time is short. And here's the thing. I don't want it to take the argument into an argument of good and evil and on this vast scale where you're going. And you've made some very good points. I hear what you're saying. I know that many, many, many people agree with you. I'm glad your mind is open, though, onto looking at the things. I like to stick with actual historical facts in this time period that I'm in. I agree that Hitler admired Napoleon. He saw Napoleon as someone who, a little bit different light than you did. That is something that really needs to be gone into, but in another program of Hitler's military.
I appreciate that. I guess my last word, 5 seconds, is Hitler was a mini Antichrist compared to what's coming. And that's just what I think. But
all right.
Okay, well, have a nice day.
All right, you too. And thank you very much for the call, Lee.
And I do enjoy your show, even though I don't like what you're saying all the time.
Good.
I listen a lot. Okay, well, have a good day.
Good, thanks. All right, well, that was a good call from Lee. And I'm glad that Lee called in, because I asked for people who disagreed with some things I'm saying and have a different take on it, and most people do. And so to call and express it, I just don't want it to take over, you know, certain to go from one thing to another and go off in another direction. We will get back to that one of these days. But to go back to the authoritarian personality, all right, and I think I'm done talking about Hitler for this program too. The book was premised on the basic idea that the presence in a society of Christianity, capitalism, and the patriarchal authoritarian family created a character prone to racial prejudice and German fascism. This is what the authoritarian personality was arguing. It was saying that, of course, the Germans, was saying that the authoritarian personality was the German people, and that they were fascists and they were prone to racial prejudice. And what was behind that, what supported them in that, was Christianity, capitalism, and their a patriarchal authoritarian family. So the Authoritarian Personality book became a handbook for a national campaign against any kind of prejudice or discrimination, on the theory that if these evils were not eradicated, another Holocaust might occur on the American continent. And this campaign provided the basis, or a basis, for political correctness. I'm taking this from the book I recommended by William Lind on what is political correctness. That's not the exact title of the book, but I've given you that before. If you just Google William Lind, political correctness, you'll come up with this. So now, one of the most important contributors to political correctness, it goes on a little bit later, was Betty Friedan. Through her book, The Feminine Mystique, Friedan became the mother of the modern feminist movement in America. Friedan was not a member of the Frankfurt School, but she was strongly influenced by it. And, of course, Friedan was Jewish. The one who wrote the authoritarian personality was Jewish. And these were very conscious. They were very conscious of their Jewishness. Now, Friedan's work, it says, offers a useful case study of the Marxist roots of political correctness. She devoted almost a full chapter of The Feminine Mystique to Abraham Maslow's theory of self-actualization. Now, Maslow was a social psychologist who in his early years did research on female dominance in sexuality. The significance of the historical roots of political correctness cannot be fully appreciated unless Betty Friedan's revolution in sex roles is viewed for what it really was, a manifestation of the social revolutionary process begun by Karl Marx. Now, remember, these people were the ones that Adolf Hitler was against. I'm just saying, remember that. These are the ones, and he was the one they were against. These were the enemies on either side here. The Marxists, the Bolshevists, and the Nazis, the National Socialists in Germany, who wanted to get this whole thought process out of Germany. It had taken hold very strongly. All right, I did mention Hitler again, didn't I? All right, the idea of transforming a patriarchy into a matriarchy is what a sex role inversion is designed to do, which is what a sex role inversion is designed to do, can be connected directly to Friedrich Engels' book, The Origin of the Family, Private Property, and the State. Of course, Engels was a partner of Marx, who supplied Marx with money. His father was a wealthy German industrialist. Engels was also Jewish. First published in 1884, this book, The Origin of the Family, Private Property, and the State, popularized the now-accepted feminist belief, this is back in 1884, friends, that deep-rooted discrimination against the oppressed female sex was a function of patriarchy. The belief that matriarchy was the solution to patriarchy flows from Marx's comments in The German Ideology, published in 1845. Well, I haven't read all these works. I can't affirm that for myself, but if what they're saying here is correct, it's pretty wild to think that if you have patriarchy and it's not good, that the solution to that is to put in place a matriarchy instead. What's the difference? I mean, just a different sex. In this work, Marx advanced the idea that wives and children were the first property of the patriarchal male. And, of course, this was not good in his mind. And, of course, he tried to make women think that they were property and that their males thought of them as property. The Frankfurt School's matriarchal theory and its near relation, which is androgyny theory, something I have never studied, both originated from these sources. But I know what androgyny is. All right, the proponents of political correctness have concentrated their efforts on the curriculum, too. Now we're going into the university area. This is a whole different part of this book, talking about what has happened to our university curriculums. Very interesting. Their efforts will radically alter what new generations of Americans will learn. In this battle, the handmaiden of political correctness has been the multicultural movement. A number of critics have rightly pointed out that multiculturalism is more than an argument for courses that concentrate on groups that at one time were disadvantaged or oppressed. That is, trying to, you know, level the playing field and be fair and give these people who were at one time oppressed and disadvantaged a little bit of a boost and some extra help so that they can catch up. No, it's not that, the author argues. Rather, multiculturalism involves the systematic restructuring of the curriculum so as to hinder students from learning about the Western tradition. This is very important. We see that what has happened to our university curriculums is that the need to learn about Western tradition, Western civilization, all the immense learning and accomplishments and achievements of the Western nations, which really makes up the greatest civilization the world probably has ever seen, which is Western civilization. Although, if you're Asian, there are great civilizations in China and other places too, but Western civilization is definitely among the top, among things to be highly admired for the tremendous strides that have freed people of the world from so many horrors because of the sciences, the advance in science, advance in philosophy, the advance in human values and human relations and human rights. Very, very important. But this is now being downplayed. This is being downplayed for in the name of the bad things that were done. And for example, Stanford University in California, a very, very major, prestigious university, eliminated its long-standing Western civilization requirement in 1988 and replaced it with a multicultural program known as Culture, Ideas, and Values. So, we know how these, most of you might know how these current courses in the universities are going. There are all these vague things which talk about all the various cultures and kind of make them all equal and also put valuations on them differently than what we've had in the past. All right, we'll be back. I'm afraid we're at our last, we're going to have our last 5 minutes after this break.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
Estrogen dominance, a brand new 20th century disease, a phrase coined by Dr. John R. Lee 35 years ago. Dr. Lee proved that all the estrogen that is coming from food and water is having a devastating effect on our health. The rapid rise in breast cancer, uterine cancer, prostate cancer, weight gain, osteoporosis, feminizing of our boys and early puberty of our girls, and also the destruction of natural killer cell function. Natural killer cells are our only protection from cancer and viral infection. Dr. Lee found that using natural progesterone, about 20 milligrams per day, would not only reverse osteoporosis, but would greatly reduce the cancer issues, as well as dozens of other health challenges we face today. Visit our website, healthlinkamerica.com, to order the DVD on hormone imbalance. Learn how hormone imbalance destroys the immune system and get started on natural progesterone and Cyto-S. It will not only change your life, it may in fact save your life. Once again, that website is healthlinkamerica.com.
The Berkeylite's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkeylite, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkeylite is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkeylite, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Carolyn Yeager with the Revisionist Report, just finishing up today's program and finishing up this topic for now. And I actually only have a little bit left in my prepared material, so I'll be able to do that. I was talking about Stanford University and how it eliminated its Western civilization requirements in history. They were basically talking in this part of the book about how history has been just demolished, and not only in the universities, but now in the high schools. I've read some articles recently in the news about this. It'd be interesting to talk about that, but I don't have time. But they really don't want, students are not learning our history, what they used to learn in history, which wasn't all that good, but now they're not learning any of that even. And under this new program at Stanford, which was put in place in 1988 already, you could just as easily, they say, study Marxist revolutionaries in Central America as they can Plato, Shakespeare, or Newton. Now, those were like, you know, you could choose. If you didn't want to study about Plato, Shakespeare, or Newton, which is the basis, part of the basis of Western knowledge, you could instead, if you wanted to learn about Marxist revolutionaries in Central America as your history of, subject, then you could do that. And I know that's true because it's been like that for a long time. Stanford has also led the movement away from serious study of of history. Well, okay, students at Stanford, like students at all but one of the other top 50 universities in the United States, are not required to take a single course in history. Instead, they are offered a choice of courses under the heading of American Cultures. All right, well, what I want to end this program with is what I was talking about at the end of yesterday's program, and that is, what are we going to do about it? Now, I have to go back to where I was, where I started, but okay. I was saying how, and I got this from the book, but I agree with it. What needs to be done is to defy political correctness. Do not go along with it. Whatever it is that for you, you notice that is politically correct that you don't really agree with, and like this, like John was talking about the gay rights, you are the one, like John should stop using the word gay. He probably doesn't use it. But if he does, or if any of you do, we don't use the word gay. Don't go along with that word gay. Use the word homosexual. And if they say, oh, why, you know, if the person you're talking to keeps using gay, just keep using homosexual. And if somebody takes you up on it, doesn't like it, explain to them why you use it, why it's the correct term, and why gay is not, and what the purpose of the word gay is. Gay is one of those words that is put in there in order to not allow us to see homosexuality for what it is. We all know that. And there's other words that I had brought up, some words like racism and words like anti-Semite. You know, don't be afraid of these words and question whether they have any real meaning or not, which we know they really don't. Now, there are a lot of other things. Whatever it is that we need to change our language. See, they've changed our language. We need to reject those changes and outwardly, out in public, and not just on talk radio, which is a good place to do it, but wherever we go and whatever we do and whoever we're dealing with, to be not a person who accepts what political correctness has laid down as the law. And this will start making a huge difference. Believe me, you will make a huge difference if you do just that. And that's a very good beginning. Refuse to go along, which is called resistance. We can have our own resistance, and we need to resist it. This is one way. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for being with me this week. And on Monday, please come back. I'm not sure, but I will be talking about Dennis Abey anyway, and it's going to be a very interesting program. So I hope to see you then. Have a wonderful weekend. Goodbye.
Gold, ever climbing as the